Now we're going to join the Board of County Commissioners meeting in progress. This week's health updates held as a virtual meeting during the pandemic. Jefferson County Public Health Officer Dr. Allison Berry and Emergency Management Director Willie Bentz. Here we go.
So the case rate in Washington State is 394 per 100,000. So you want to multiply that by six, and that puts it at 2,364 per 100,000 for the state in the last 2 weeks. Hospitalizations are rising in the state, particularly in the kind of I-5 corridor area. We're not seeing a dramatic rise in hospitalizations here yet. In Jefferson County, we have 66 new cases that came in over the weekend for a total of 3,770 with a case rate of 646 per 100,000. With our case ascertainment rate, that gives us a rough estimate of about 1,300 cases per 100,000. So actually less than the state rate at this point. It's 9% positivity. We have no people currently in the hospital for COVID-19. For a total of 127 hospitalizations so far in this response and 29 deaths. We did announce one new death last week. That was a person in his 70s. He died out of state, but he did die due to COVID pneumonia when we got his death certificate, so we are counting it. He's a Jefferson County resident. We don't have any evidence that he was vaccinated in state, but we can't rule out that he got a vaccine out of state. In neighboring Clallam County, we're up to 12,119 cases per 100,000. 12,119 cases. That puts us at a case rate of 670 per 100,000 with an 8% positivity.
Those days.
Those are the people on Mama's meeting. We have two people currently hospitalized for COVID-19 in Clallam County for a total of 369 hospitalizations and 112 deaths. So at this point, we are starting to see hospitalizations rise, but more slowly than in prior variant waves. That is still predominantly those who are unvaccinated or are unboosted elders, but we are starting to see a small rise in boosted hospitalizations for people over 65. It's still relatively small, but given that we're starting to see that with the amount of cases that we're seeing in our region, I do think it's appropriate at this time to recommend an additional booster for those over 65. I still don't see any evidence for an additional booster for those over 50. Certainly not harmful, very reasonable to get, but we just don't have any evidence that it's needed. I do think we're starting to see some evidence for benefit for the 65 plus crowd, however. So I think it would be a good time, in addition to wearing a high quality mask, to move forward with getting that second booster for our 65 plus set. The other big thing that we're starting to see a lot of is clusters of COVID-19 transmission in schools. This is not entirely unsurprising with these kind of case rates and how many of our students are currently unmasked in schools. It's an indoor area where you're sitting with 25 plus people, and often, especially in junior and senior high, moving between multiple classes. So there's a really high risk of getting exposed to COVID-19 in schools at this point, just due to the unmasking there. Because of those clusters, we have mandated masks in certain affected classrooms, and most recently in a couple schools as a whole, because we were seeing such significant levels of transmission there. We are likely to see additional need for masking requirements in schools in the coming weeks, just due to the amount of transmission. The primary goal there is that we want to see our schools open and our kids able to attend school. And if we get too much transmission in school, if we get too many teachers infected in particular, we lose the ability to keep kids in in-person school. So we don't make those decisions lightly, but we have moved forward with mandating masking for a short period of time in schools that are particularly affected by COVID-19 transmission at this point. So at this point, we are well beyond the case rate where we recommend masking in indoor settings. I would strongly recommend that all of us wear a high quality mask when we're indoors around other people, especially if you're in a group of more than 10 people, if you're in a store, if you're in a business. We're starting to see clusters of COVID-19 cases in workplaces again, particularly around unmasking. So really want to encourage everyone, especially our high-risk folks, to put on a mask when you're in an indoor setting. The other thing I want to touch base on briefly is Paxlovid distribution. We have adequate supplies of Paxlovid, but we are seeing really high demand for this medication in Jefferson County, primarily due to our case rates and the age of our population. I was just on a call with Jefferson Healthcare this morning, and they wanted me to pass forward this message. So Jefferson Healthcare is administering COVID-19 antiviral medications for the treatment of COVID-19. If you have a positive COVID-19 test and seek antiviral medication, please call the nurse consult hotline. The consult line is 360-344-3094, and the nurses will assist you to figure out whether or not you are eligible for that medication, either through a primary care provider, evaluation, or potentially through the Express Clinic. But please call ahead if you have COVID-19. We really want to make sure and get you into the appropriate slot. And please try to avoid calling the emergency department. We had a lot of folks seeking care at the emergency department over the weekend trying to get Paxlovid. That's understandable. If you're sick with COVID and you know you're high risk, we want to make sure you get treated. But it's better to call the nurse consult hotline. Because of the demand right now, you will likely have to leave a message. But go ahead and leave that message. They will call you back, and we'll make sure you can access that medication. Just know that there's a lot of demand for that service. So if they don't pick up right away, it's just because they're helping someone else. And we'll make sure that we get everybody taken care of. And so with that, I am, one last big detail I wanted to touch base on. So in the United States as a whole, we are likely to pass 1 million deaths due to COVID-19 in the next day. 1 to 2 days from now, we're likely to surpass that number based on the Johns Hopkins death estimates. That's a sobering number that I don't think any of us ever thought we were going to pass. And many of those deaths were unnecessary. When it comes to COVID-19, we know how to prevent transmission of COVID-19 at this point. We know how to prevent severe disease and death. The best thing we can do to reduce severe disease due to COVID-19 is to get vaccinated. The best thing we can do to reduce transmission of COVID-19 is to wear a high quality mask in indoor settings. So if we do those two things alone, we can reduce future deaths from COVID-19. I am glad to say that in Jefferson County, we have not seen that level of death due to COVID-19, largely due to the work of our community to do those two important things. But I really want to encourage all of us to keep masking in indoor settings. If you haven't gotten your vaccine and your booster, please move forward with it. And if you're over 65, consider getting a second booster as well so that you can be protected in this most recent surge. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
And I know we got a number of KPTZ questions, but I also know we have some right here in the Zoom room. So Greg or Kate?
I think I'll defer to Kate to start off today.
Yes, I've had a crash course in COVID. I thought I knew a lot about COVID, and then actually having it for the last week has taught me a lot more. So I'll try not to dominate with too many questions, but I do have a couple. And I'll just say, I have no idea where I got it. And I'm pretty darn careful. So the level of community transmission is high. Technically I had a mild case, but it did not feel mild. It's been very hard. So one question, Dr. Berry, I did not consider seeking Paxlovid, even though people mentioned or asked if I was going to. I just assumed, because I'm relatively young and healthy, that I would not be eligible. Can you speak to what makes one eligible for that? And if there is any benefit in not seeking it, if you are maybe borderline, or what's the thinking there?
Sure. So Paxlovid is the oral medication to treat COVID-19. It works very well. It is only authorized for people who are high risk of severe disease due to COVID-19. And so that means people over 65 or anyone 12 and up who has underlying medical conditions. That could be things like asthma, COPD, heart disease, immunosuppression. If you do have underlying conditions, I do recommend moving forward with trying to access Paxlovid. It's a strain to try to get everybody treated, but we don't want people to avoid treatment at this point. But I have heard from some folks who are young, healthy, and don't have underlying conditions of, hey, can I have some too? I hear it works really well, which is understandable because COVID-19 is really unpleasant, even if you have a mild case. But right now, it's only authorized for those who are likely to have severe disease. So anyone 12 and up with underlying conditions, anyone over 65, especially those who are immunosuppressed or those who are getting treatment for cancer therapy, those are the folks who need that treatment the very most, because we know that they're not getting the full benefit of their vaccine to prevent severe disease. So certainly if you fall into either of those two categories, please get tested and call to access that treatment right away. We want to get it to you sooner rather than later. We do still have the monoclonal antibodies available as well. Paxlovid can be given up to 5 days after your first symptoms. The monoclonal antibodies can be given up to 7 days after your first symptoms. And so we can get folks those too if you're past the 5 day cutoff. And I thought it might be good along those same lines, since a lot of us are getting a crash course in this. We talked a bit in detail about how to manage household contacts last time we were together. And I thought it might be useful to touch base a little bit on isolation. I'm getting a lot of calls from my friends who are testing positive because there is so much in the community of what really those isolation protocols mean. So if you test positive for COVID, the most important thing is to isolate for those first 5 days after your symptoms start. But then there comes a lot of question about what do you do after day five? So if you're asymptomatic, if your symptoms have gone away by the end of day five, it is okay to leave isolation and wear a high quality mask, but do avoid high risk settings. You don't go into a long-term care facility or a jail or any of those high risk settings. And if you're gonna be going into a congregate setting, including a place like schools, it is required to get a negative test before you leave isolation early. So we do have antigen tests available at our schools, at our daycares, places where we know that people are gonna be very close together and we don't wanna risk further transmission there. Some things that you can do successfully in isolation. So you can do curbside pickup of groceries. That is acceptable in isolation. You can go outside. So you can meet up with friends and family outside as long as you keep some distance between you. So you don't have to stay entirely in your home. We've been dealing with isolation of my daughter in this house. And so we still go on very distanced hikes just to get outside. We work in the garden. There are lots of things you can do to try to make it a little more manageable. But outside meetups with some distance are very reasonable. And then wearing a mask around a small group of people after day five is also very reasonable if your symptoms have gone away.
So can I follow up on that? Because the CDC guidance does include that you might choose to wait until you test negative to come out of isolation. And mm-hmm. I have been stuck in this limbo of mm-hmm. I'm still testing positive on day eight, mm-hmm. Which is unusual, I think. And you know, I tend to be a rule follower and want to be really conscientious. So I'm still in my bedroom on day eight. Is there benefit to that? It's so confusing to have the CDC guidance say, yes, you can come out after day five, and then, but if you, it actually says if you want to test, sure. until you're negative. And I'm like, that is not helpful.
That's not helpful guidance. The rough rule of thumb, I would say, is after day five, it's reasonable to start slowly kind of bringing back some contact, depending on how risky that contact is. So for instance, you know, in family groupings, one of the hardest things can be having to separate yourself from family. And so coming out in a well-fitted mask, having the other people masked around you, and having some kind of short meetups with your family, I think is reasonable, as long as you maintain masking. I wouldn't, on day six, have an unmasked dinner, for example, with your family, because 30% of people are still shedding viable virus between days 6 and 10. But if you're masked, you have a small group, and you have these kind of critical social interactions that you need for your mental health, I think that is very reasonable. We just don't want you to go into kind of big group crowded settings or certainly visit high-risk people during that time. But yes, I think the CDC guidance is confusing. And so what I would say is the big takeaway is definitely stay home for 5 days. Beyond 5 days, it's reasonable to start interacting with small groups of people in masked settings if you're asymptomatic. If you're still coughing significantly, then please do stay home because that's going to really increase the probability that you're shedding viable virus. You can take a test to leave isolation early, for instance, to go into a higher risk space like a school. But if you test positive up to day 10, if you're testing positive after day 10, you can go ahead and leave isolation. But whether or not you test after day 5, you still have to wear a mask in those group indoor settings.
And when you say leave early, that is after the 5 days, right?
That's after the 5 days. Yes. Yeah. No one should leave isolation before day 5. But day 6 through 10, it's reasonable to start scaling back those interactions. Wear a good high quality mask. But before you go to any high risk space, before you get on a plane, before you go to a school or any high risk space like that, please do take a test first to make sure you're testing negative, because those are spaces where you really could expose a lot of people if you were still positive.
Yeah, well, and I guess just I will also say for the public's benefit that, I was getting on an airplane, supposed to get on an airplane a week ago to fly to DC. I felt totally fine and took a test just kind of on a whim of like, hey, wouldn't it be a bummer to find out I was positive in DC? And sure enough, it was positive. And so I'm so glad I didn't get on an airplane. I didn't go to, 10 meetings in DC before getting symptomatic.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that story. I think it is important to note that, the folks who are testing positive right now are generally people who are being conscientious and testing so as not to expose other people. And really all of this talk about isolation is to protect the people around you, is to make sure that, this really stops with you. And I think one thing that it's not fun to have a kid in isolation and to deal with quarantine. But the goal there is to try to make sure that this virus doesn't go beyond us, that we keep it here and we don't have to deal with feeling like we gave other people COVID-19. All right.
I have a question.
Sure.
I haven't contracted COVID yet, but I feel like I'm increasingly nervous about it as the case counts go up and the situation around the cases changes. And I'm just wondering, maybe this is more a question for my colleagues here, should we go back to virtual meetings? I mean, we have maybe one or two people come into the chambers with us. It's hard for me to wear my mask and be audible or understandable with these microphones. And so I'm just feeling like maybe it's time to think about while we're at this high rate on the meter.
Can I add my question to yours? I have a very similar question.
Okay.
To hear from Dr. Barrett. I believe that OPMA is going to require us to come up with some local emergency proclamation language to keep meetings virtual. And I think that in light of the, I guess I'm wondering if Dr. Barrett would think that's the best practice right now. I mean, I feel like a lot of the hybrid meetings are a little clunky still as well as we work through it. So some of the committees that I'm on are not going to be able to manage hybrid meetings if not everyone has a laptop in front of them well and do their work as effectively. So I guess, what do you think about going back to virtual meetings, Dr. Barry?
I certainly think that virtual meetings are the safest option. They're going to reduce the risk of transmission in those settings, because if we have a positive, we know that we're not exposing everybody else in that room. I do think it is possible to do a hybrid meeting safely if it's small, so what you're describing, a small group in an indoor setting with, maybe a few members of the public, I think that can be done well. But it's, if we start seeing larger meetings where you're seeing 20, 30 people packing the indoor spaces, that's not something I would recommend at this point. If we do end up needing a proclamation, I don't know that we actually fully rescinded Dr. Locke's prior one. So I think it might still be on the books because we didn't move to the full in-person meetings. So we can take a look at that if we decide to move to all virtual for Jefferson County as a whole. Certainly safest is virtual. A small indoor masked public meeting can be done well, but I wouldn't recommend any large indoor meetings at this point. And I think just for the public's benefit, one of the things that we are seeing in our investigations is we're starting to see very large meetings. You know, people are having big Rotary Club meetings with 100 people indoors having meals together. And we're seeing big outbreaks again related to that. And so I think the challenge we're facing is this kind of general move to return to normalcy. Those kind of big indoor unmasked meetings, those are very risky and much more risky than kind of what you're describing of less than 10 people. I would say for my own risk mitigation, I don't like to be in crowds of more than 10 people if there's not good quality masking at this time. There's just too much COVID going on.
Well, I think from my personal comfort, I starting next week, I think I'll participate from my office.
It's unpleasant to get COVID, and so it is worth trying to avoid. And particularly with us starting to see some strain on our healthcare system, particularly to manage just outpatient prescription of medication, I think anything we all can do to reduce transmission in our community would help. Having all of us do a little works a lot better than a few of us doing everything. So if more of us can wear masks in indoor settings, if more of us can move forward with getting our boosters, those two things in particular will make a big difference to reduce transmission here.
Mark, did you want to say something? Yeah, Mark.
Dr. Berry, could you remind people where they can get their booster shots?
Sure. So there are booster shots available at many of our local pharmacies. And if you go to Jefferson County Public Health, we've got a list of who's currently offering what vaccines. You can also get vaccinated through Jefferson County Public Health. We have been filling up our slots lately, especially for boosters. We are one of the only places in town where you can get very small children vaccinated. So we keep some slots available for kids. We can still get kids in really quickly. So if you have a child who you want to get vaccinated or get boosted, if they're eligible for that, if they're over 12, we can get them in pretty quickly. But for boosters, we're booking out kind of a couple weeks generally. But the vast majority of our pharmacies can do it. You can also get vaccinated in your primary care appointments when you go see your healthcare provider. Generally, our healthcare providers are so busy right now that they can't just see you for a vaccine. It's better to go to the pharmacies for that. But if you are seeing your primary care provider, check in about getting that additional booster if you're eligible.
Okay. And if so, my two shots and my booster were all Pfizer. So am I constrained regarding what booster I could get?
Great question. You can get either of the mRNA boosters, so Pfizer or Moderna. Generally, your best bang for your buck is actually to mix a little bit and get a Moderna booster if you can get one. And so you can go to Vaccine Finder to figure out which pharmacy has which one. But if you can only find another Pfizer, that's a great second booster. But it's only the mRNA vaccines that we do second boosters for. You can't get an additional J&J.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions in the Zoom room here? I know I saw at least a couple KPTZ questions this week.
Sure. So one question I got was about the CDC community levels and comparing that to how we talk about risk here. So this person said that it looks like the CDC considers Jefferson County low risk, but here we consider it high risk. What's the difference? What's going on there? Interestingly, we have just crossed over into the medium risk category for this, even the CDC's measures, just because of how much community transmission we have. So we're out of the low risk by CDC's measures. The CDC introduced community levels as a way of understanding the risk in a given community towards the end of March of this year. And it was a pretty dramatic change in how the CDC measures risk. So they used to have a risk dial that was very similar to ours, that was based exclusively on COVID-19 cases in your region. Then at the end of March, they introduced these community levels that basically made the vast majority of the country go from high risk to low risk overnight. And that was very confusing for many of us. I can tell you it was pretty roundly criticized by most epidemiologists, myself included, because of the thresholds that they set. So in the CDC community levels, what they set was that basically In order to be in the move from low to medium risk, you have to have more than 400 cases per 100,000 in the last 2 weeks, which is a very high number. That's just to go from low to medium. And then in order to be to get into high, you have to have hospitals that are overwhelmed. And I think there is definitely some benefit for considering hospital utilization in our risk calculus. But the challenge is when you look at the community levels, the CDC used those community levels to decide whether or not you should wear a mask at all. And so on the CDC community level risk estimator, it doesn't even say all of us should wear masks until the hospitals are already overwhelmed. And that is far too late. If we wait until our hospitals are in dire straits before we consider wearing a mask in indoor settings, we're going to be in a world of hurt. So we want to wear masks in indoor settings before our hospitals are overwhelmed. We don't want to do that again. And so that's why we pay so much attention to case rates here, is so we can try to prevent hospital overload. We also pay attention to case rates, particularly because that's what actually determines your personal risk. You know, from an individual standpoint, it doesn't really matter whether or not the hospitals are full. That doesn't tell you whether or not you're going to get COVID-19 in this room. What does tell you whether or not you're going to get COVID-19 in this room is our case rates. And so our current risk dial much more closely mirrors actually the CDC's original case rates that determined low to high risk as far as community transmission. So that's why you see the difference. You'll find many epidemiologists, many public health departments around the country have kind of held on to the old risk dials because we felt that the CDC community levels just swung way too far in the opposite direction. And I think those have unfortunately contributed to the community understanding that COVID-19 is over. Because if you look at the CDC map, it looks like everybody's green, but it turns out you're green until your hospitals are overwhelmed. And that doesn't really fit that well with reality. So we're holding on to ours. We do think it's helpful for people to know how high COVID-19 rates are, and they are very high right now. Wearing a mask is something all of us can do. It's a simple thing that we can do in indoor settings to protect ourselves and our neighbors. Other questions. One person asked if I can repeat the total number of new cases that came in over the weekend. So we got 66 new cases over the weekend. Our case rate is up to 646 per 100,000. So certainly very much in the high transmission rate. I would strongly recommend masking in indoor settings and would certainly avoid large crowded areas where people are unmasked if you aren't able to wear a mask in those spaces. Remember that high quality masks do a fantastic job of protecting you. So a KN95 or a KF94 or an N95, if you tolerate it, can really protect you well, even if other people around you are unmasked. This person was talking about kind of how we can spread the word better about the rate of transmission in our community. We did send out some new signage for businesses where they could post a sign with a QR code that links to our risk dial. So it'll automatically update if you scan the QR code. We have found for the businesses, it's hard for them to update the dial and print off a new sign whenever the dial moves. And so we haven't moved forward with giving them some that they have to update as the dial changes. We've just done the QR code. I think this person's sharing that it seems like a lot of people don't know how bad COVID-19 transmission is in our region. And I think that's true. And I think part of that really is that we're fighting a bit of an uphill battle against the national discourse around COVID-19 because of things like the CDC community levels, things like kind of a general political move to want to move past it. And I think fatigue. You know, our communities are fatigued. Many people want to be past COVID. The hard thing is we just aren't past it yet. I don't think we're at a point where we need to mandate masking universally. Really the trigger for that would be if we saw our hospitals be overwhelmed, but we are certainly at a place where we should mask in indoor settings to protect ourselves and to protect others. Couple other quick questions. One was about quarantine. If you have a family member who is positive for COVID-19. We talked, and I mentioned, particularly after that person takes a shower, waiting an hour before you use the bathroom. That's because you get aerosolized viral particles in a shower that hang in the air for up to 70 minutes. This person is asking, do they have to wait even longer if they're going to take a shower? No, it's the 70 minutes is how long it takes for those viral particles to settle out of the air and land on the surfaces. They don't live long on surfaces, so it's okay if they're on the surfaces. The main thing is you just don't want them up in the air. Wash your hands as you exit the bathroom, as you normally would anyway, and that should keep you plenty safe. Last question was, how concerned should we be about being unmasked in large, close crowds outside, i.e. the roadie parade? Should we mask up? I would say generally outside transmission is incredibly rare. The one exception to that, that I, when I would put a mask on, would be if I was in a large outdoor crowd close together that wasn't moving. So for instance, if you're watching the roadie parade and you're shoulder to shoulder with a bunch of other people, that is one of the few times outside that you could get COVID. And so if I were shoulder to shoulder, we weren't moving, we're just gonna stand there next to a bunch of strangers, that's a time where I would think about masking up if it was a really large crowd in an outdoor setting. But if you're moving, if air is moving freely, you generally don't have to mask when you're outside. And that is all I have.
Thank you, Dr. Berry. I'm getting texts, so I'm multitasking right now. Appreciate all the updates. Have any other questions cropped up in the Zoom room here? We look forward to-
If I could just make a comment, and it's something I'm aware of and curious if you want to respond to this, Dr. Berry, but you know, when I got sicker than I expected to, which I don't know why I thought I would have such a mild case, but I didn't. I was really surprised in looking for kind of help online of how to treat COVID. There was so little available. I mean, really just trying to find comfort at home. There was so little information available. Everything online was about how to prevent transmission. And I just felt a little sad that like a lot of people were suffering and it was really hard to find good information about just basic comfort care. And you know, I think that's a great opportunity for misinformation then to fill that vacuum. And I'm curious, is it like because the medical community wants to be cautious about providing kind of blanket medical advice in a forum like the internet? But, you know, I was just like, what pain reliever should I take? Is it okay to use cold medicine? Like, are there things I shouldn't do while I still have a fever? And that kind of information was almost impossible to find. And I just felt sad for the amount of pain that people have been in without access to good information.
No, I think it's a really good point. Being a doctor that my friends know, I get those questions a lot. And so that tells me that there is a gap in information online. And I think that is something we can help fill. Generally, I think part of that is that, you know, the medical community is weirdly risk averse when it comes to this kind of thing, and also overwhelmed to give some benefit of the doubt. But I think it would help to just put some general messaging out there about what to do when you have COVID. How do you take care of yourself? How do you just help yourself feel better? Just a little bit that I can give right now is generally the same things you would do for a cold or flu are fine with COVID and are helpful. So one of the most common ways in particular our elders end up getting hospitalized is they get dehydrated. So to make sure you're hydrating well, really good way to hydrate beyond water is just to take some Gatorade and dilute it in half. And if you drink that, that will really help you stay hydrated through the process. If you're noticing that you're getting a little bit dehydrated, Tylenol is fine. If you normally can take Tylenol, you can take it with COVID and it can help reduce your fever. There's no danger to reducing your fever as long as you're taking your medications within the normal prescription ranges. So you can take Tylenol or ibuprofen. They both work fine to help kind of reduce symptoms. Normal cold medicine like DayQuil and NyQuil are also fine when you have COVID. Humidity can also be helpful to reduce coughing symptoms. So especially if you've got little ones at home, humidity can be really helpful, or just kind of classic old remedies like ginger tea, mint tea, or like Vicks vapor rub also really help with the littles to help kind of loosen things up and just help those symptoms feel a little bit better. That's most of what we lean on around here. And if you stay hydrated, if you kind of manage those symptoms of pain and discomfort and fever, that helps make it a little bit more tolerable. And of course, eat well as much as you feel comfortable. Some people do get pretty nauseous with COVID. Some people don't. Some people do still experience changes in their sense of taste. So just eat what feels the most comfortable for you. But even more important than food, it's important to stay hydrated. Good broths, things like that, go a long way to helping you just feel a little more human as you get through it. And I do think your point about mild disease is important. When we talk about mild versus severe disease in the medical community, what we mean when we say mild is you don't need an ICU bed, but that doesn't mean it feels great to have it. That's much different than I think how most of the public thinks about mild. For some people, people really do feel like they have a mild cold, and that's great. For a lot of people, they feel like they have a solid case of the flu. And I've heard from a lot of friends that it's worse than they thought it was gonna be. It varies a lot. Based on the person. The other thing that we do see still is kind of, it is a vascular disease. So some people will describe that they have kind of poor circulation, things like that. Staying well hydrated helps with that, and keeping your extremities warm helps as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Berry. The practical, tangible tips really help, because I mean, the one thing I would add is I've gotten a few people asking me when I'm masking, why I'm masking. And I'm like, well, I'm masking because there are older folks in my life who I care about fiercely, you know, some of my closest family that I don't want to get sick. And I think I worry about them more than I worry about myself, but it's the answer I give people. It's because I'm going to be, because I want to be in contact with my mom and my mom's friends and a lot of my aunties, my adopted aunties and uncles in the community. And I don't want to make anybody sick. And that's a core motivation for me. And one of the big reasons I don't want to get sick. So
yeah.
I just want to say that out loud.
That's really important. It's masking is for you and it's for the people around you. We have high-risk people in Jefferson County we want to take care of. And that's the other reason why you test quickly if you get sick. We were really lucky. We caught my daughter's infection on Mother's Day, right before we met with my mom, who's in her 70s. So thankfully, we were able to keep from exposing her. And so testing quickly, wearing a mask makes a huge difference to reduce transmission to others.
And I think it's also, remind us of the website where you get free tests. Say yes.
Say yes, COVID test. You can get free tests from the state. And you can get up to 10. Up to every month if you need. So definitely utilize that service. You can also get them from the federal government site as well. Those tend to take just a little bit longer than the state site. You can order from both. You can still get them at libraries and at Jefferson County Public Health as well. For Jefferson County Public Health Supply, because we actually purchase those, we keep those for if you're symptomatic or exposed. But everywhere else, particularly through Say Yes COVID test, you can order them before you're sick. And I recommend you do.
Thank you so much, Dr. Berry and Little Berry. I hear the Little Berry in the background.
Yeah, she likes the meetings.
Well, thanks for your time again this morning, and we'll talk to you next week. Hopefully our case rates will moderate a little bit.
Fingers crossed.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.